Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 2:45 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is February 1st, and it's Chinese New Year, so most of Asia is closed. Gong Qi Fa Sai to anyone who's celebrating. And I thought we'd kick off today with the total return on 10-year Treasury futures. Haven't looked at this particular index in the broadcast for quite a while, but it's at an important level. So the index peaked in the middle of 2020, and since then there's been a clear succession of lower rally highs, and it's encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. So we haven't had anything even remotely like this since 2016 through 2018. And immediately after that, we had a really significant breakout, and the total return leapt higher. And it then went into a really impressive acceleration during the early part of 2020 because of the pandemic panic. But now it's back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And I think that's particularly relevant because one of the most important things about the 1,000-day moving average is that it offers support in secular trends. So trends that last for years, even decades at a time, will often find support in the region of that 1,000-day moving average during periods of stress. And this trend is probably one of the longest running in history, because bond yields peaked in the early 1980s and they've been contracting since. And as a result, the total return on the bond investment rolled over on a constant basis has done nothing but rise. But we can also see from this chart that there's been a significant loss of uptrend momentum. And that began in 2016. Then, of course, we had the big pop on the upside in 2018 and 19. And now, for really only the first time, or the second time, I should say, in history, we've seen the index come back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So, of course, the last time that happened, it happened right before a really significant rally. So we really should be asking the question, what to expect next? Are yields going to continue higher, which would price in the potential that the Federal Reserve is really intent on slowing down the economy to such an extent that it will kill off inflation, in which case unemployment would rise, social problems would probably re-escalate, and then of course there would be much stronger calls for greater fiscal stimulus. So that's obviously a question. And I think it's rather unlikely that they're going to raise rates enough to create a recession environment. If, on the other hand, we start to see that recession environment, well then bonds would start to become a lot more attractive all of a sudden. On the other hand, if they don't raise rates, then that's going to contribute to inflationary pressures, and then bonds will be less attractive, yields will rise, and then this uptrend will be completely broken. But we're at really the do-or-die moment right now. So let's just turn it around and look at that 10-year yield, because it's right at the upper side of the range that's been forming now for the last last year. And there have been a couple of flurries on the upside which weren't really able to be sustained. So it hasn't come back down much either, and it's still holding here in the 1.8% level. And then if we zoom in again and just look at the last few days, well, we've had a meaningful contraction for 2 days and then a rebound in here today. And as soon as bond yields started to contract, the Nasdaq bounced. So we had an impressive rebound for 2 days, and it was in positive territory and reversed an early decline as we approach the close in here today as well. But I think it's important to highlight that the Nasdaq has lost uptrend consistency, and this is a much deeper correction than we've seen at any point since early 2020. And It has type 2 top formation characteristics. So we have the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and it's quite normal following such a large pullback that dip buyers will be encouraged to jump back in, and that's definitely what we've seen in the last few days. But additionally, then, there will be lots of people who were scared by the size and depth of the pullback. So as the price goes back up above the trend mean and into, or at least to test the lower side of the overhead trading range, there will be at least some people who will be looking to take profits on the rebound and to de-risk overall. And what happens in terms of government bond yields is going to be rather pivotal here. Because if the 10-year yield breaks on the upside, well, then that's going to start pricing in greater inflationary pressures, and then it's going to further expose this catch-22 situation that the Federal Reserve finds itself in. They are inhibited from raising rates at the speed that is required to combat this inflation. At the same time, they have to, or they feel like they have to do something because they're behind the curve. And obviously, then there are political considerations as well. So we're in a rather delicate environment here. And this continues to look like a type 2 top formation. So we get a period of right-hand extension and ranging when that happens. And then subsequently, if support holds and the index can push back up into the overhead range, well then we have the potential that it was a medium-term correction. On the other hand, if it ranges and then breaks downwards again, well then we have a completed top formation. So we're in for, I think, probably some volatile ranging with some big moves on the upside and then some rather difficult periods where prices come back down as well. And we can then also look at some of the other indices like the Russell 2000, where it had a much deeper pullback. It's now rebounding and unwinding the short-term oversold condition. But of course, the big question now is whether the lower side of the overhead range is going to represent resistance. And that's going to be doubly important because it coincides with the region of the 200-day moving average. And when indices encounter resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average and then decline again, that's also evidence of top formation completion. So what happens in terms of yields is going to be particularly important for these indices. At the same time, value is attracting a lot more attention. So the UK market trades on a relative discount compared to the USA, and it remains really quite well bid. It had a comparatively small reaction over the last few weeks and has rebounded perhaps even more impressively. So we're coming back up into the peaks from back in 2018 and 19. But I think it's also important to highlight that the UK large cap index has pretty much been going nowhere since the year 2000. So there is a lot of underlying trading that can support an additional breakout from here. Then we also had some interesting trading in Brent crude today. So the price pulled back right off the open and then also has rebounded off its lows. So we're getting consolidation here in this $90 area. And there's definitely some trading going on around the idea that perhaps Russia isn't going to be quite as aggressive as people had feared. And of course, we're also going to hear from OPEC this week on what their plans are for additional supply. So prices are at new highs. We haven't seen levels in the region of $90 since 2014. And we're really quite overbought in the short term. There's clear scope that we're going to get some consolidation coming through. And I think that's also relevant for some of these energy companies because ExxonMobil is accelerating higher now. It's announced really impressive earnings. They're buying back their shares. And in fact, they're spending more money on dividends than they are on capital expenditure right now. So that's certainly creating a favorable environment for investors, and in particularly in their shares. And it's also, I think, worth looking at this over the much longer term. So we had a really significant decline in 2020, and it's really now just coming back up into that overhead trading range. But of course, Exxon is much more disciplined now about its capital and cash outflows. So they're not going to invest until they have complete visibility on what exactly they're getting into. They do anticipate increasing supply by 25% from the Permian. So this question about whether US onshore supply has in fact peaked will be tested by that. And we've definitely seen a lot less drilling going on over the last few years. So that is going to require more drilling and greater efforts to boost supply out of shale deposits. When we then think about the wider commodity complex, copper prices were up by 10 cents on the COMEX contract today and pushing back up from the region of the 200-day moving average. It's been consolidating here between about 400 and 500 for the better part of a year, and this is in the region of the peaks from back in 2011 and in 2006 through 8. And so far, this continues to look like a consolidation. Copper is something that's extremely difficult to substitute when it comes to renewable energy, and also for transmission equipment. And of course, renewable energy, because it's so geographically diverse, and because in a wind farm, every single one of those wind turbines has to be connected to the grid, it requires a huge amount of cabling. So that's difficult to do without, and it's helping to support the price. And of course, then we can think about the automotive sector, where every car that's an electric vehicle requires three times more copper than an internal combustion engine. These are significant factors in terms of new demand growth for the metal, but it continues to firm here, and that's helping to support the outlook for the sector generally. And the copper miners are also now beginning to firm from the region of their respective trend means. And Fortescue, having pulled back quite sharply following its earnings, is also beginning to demonstrate support here in the region of the 200-day moving average. Then gold prices were in mildly positive territory today. I think it's interesting that the 200-day moving average has not moved to any discernible extent, really, in the last 9 months. So prices have just gone nowhere. But there's a clear a sequence of higher reaction lows since the beginning of 2021, and the amplitude of the range is contracting. So dip buyers are waiting less time to buy, and then rally sellers are waiting less time to sell, and it's contributing to a narrowing of breadth in this range. What it also suggests is we know where stops are being placed. More often than not, people put their stop underneath the most recent low, and for short sellers above the most recent high. So when we eventually do get a breakout, then it's likely to be really very dynamic in nature, and it will unleash new sources of demand or indeed supply. So we're really at a critical juncture here. I remain very much of the view that the breakout, when it comes, will be on the upside. And silver prices have been quite depressed and have really been trending downwards for the last year, but they're beginning to firm now from the $21 area. And over the course of the last year and a half, this has been nothing more than a first step above this longer term base formation. Then I think one of the more important situations right now is nickel, because I've seen breathless reports about how much higher the price is going to go. But nickel is the one battery metal where there is an alternative source of supply, and that's from pig nickel. Now, China, and of course it's closed today, and it'll be closed for much of the rest of this week and next, isn't producing nickel from pig nickel at present, because they want clean skies over Beijing for photo ops during the Olympics. When the Olympics are over, and give it, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks, then it's likely that supply will start to ramp back up, and nickel prices will then no longer be the beneficiary of supply and elasticity. Then, at the same time, because the price of nickel is going up, and because the production of nickel is extremely carbon intensive, well then Tesla in particular is investing in lithium iron phosphate batteries, so they don't use nickel at all. Now those cars have less range, but they do have resilience, and of course because they're not using nickel they tend to be cheaper. So Tesla, for example, is deploying lithium iron phosphate in all of its regular range vehicles. And if that turns into a trend, well, then there'll be less demand for nickel as well. So it's going to be progressively more difficult for nickel prices to rally in March than it is right now. And it would suggest that the market will begin to price that in before very long. Now, when we think about other markets around the world, I think it's interesting that Japan has been reasonably quiet and hasn't been able to push back up into the overhead range just yet. But I think it's more likely than not that it will push up and reassert on the upside over the course of the next few months. And the Topix Banks Index has been quite steady here and ranging in the region of the peak from early 2021 for most of the last 2 months. And Japanese banks have got some of the lower valuations around. So that's also supportive of the view that we're going to have more interest in the banking sector over the medium term, and not least because we're in an environment where interest rates are beginning to rise, and that's obviously beneficial for lenders because generally, when interest rates rise, it's because the economy is doing well and demand for credit increases, but most particularly when people are worried about inflation because they would rather borrow now rather than borrow later when prices are higher. So we're in an environment where ex-US markets are doing better, and US markets have had a reasonable rebound. But the linchpin here is just how high can yields go before they start to become a real problem. And the yield curve spread continues to flatten. So that's pricing in the less liquid environment. The yield curve spread has gone from about 75 basis points last Wednesday to 62 and a bit in here today. Now, we don't have a deflationary, or I guess a recession risk indicator from this until it becomes inverted. But it is contracting, and eventually that will contribute to tighter financial conditions overall. I think we're still in a difficult environment, and it's difficult because we have uncertainty on the interest rate front. Now, some of these shares that are exceptionally oversold, like the ARK Innovation sector, continue to rebound. And because they pulled back so violently, then they do have additional scope for a recovery in here. But that recovery could be pulled up short if bond yields push higher from here. I think it's going to be exceptionally foolhardy of central banks to raise rates in an aggressive manner. But that doesn't mean they won't do it. And if 2018 is any guide, then a pullback of 20% was required to chasten the ambitions of central banks, and we're just not there yet. So in the short term, there is the scope for an additional rebound. We'll then start to see exactly at what point do we see resistance starting to come back in, most likely in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading ranges, and then subsequently whether the lows hold. So we've got room for short-term bounces and medium-term volatility. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.